Hello and welcome to the Fast Break Podcast. This is Aman Kidwai. I'm joined by Patrick Martin and Dan Madigan. The UConn Huskies have wrapped up their regular season with two straight wins on the road, doing so in very impressive fashion. They've broken and set a lot of league and program records. We are so impressed with them, folks. How are you guys feeling after UConn wins at Marquette and Providence to wrap up the regular season?
Relieved. I'm going with just one word right now. I feel relief. I don't know about you guys, but the road ranked loss record was kind of weighing on me more than it probably should have. I see Madigan shaking his head, so we'll get into that here in a little bit. But I was worried about that. Not that UConn couldn't perform, but it was just something I didn't want to hear from naysayers and detractors. Now UConn can completely enter the season with truly, knock on wood, zero blemishes. What have they done wrong? As I pointed out in previous episodes, the Kansas loss, it has, you know, the Stephon Castle injury looming over it. Seton Hall has the Klingon injury looming over it. And the Creighton just went nuclear, and we're going to get deeper into Creighton later. So to go into Marquette and be a team that I think is still a top 25 team without Tyler Kolek. I mean, Cam Jones is playing out of his mind. Also, Iguodaro is an all Big East player for a good reason. And Marquette needed that game to keep their, you know, their season alive from a standpoint of getting a high seed. And then you pivot to the Providence game, which we can dive deeper into. But to respond after being down, 12 points in the beginning, the Hurley Tech, the crowd is going nuts. Were they going to pack it in? They didn't need that game. No one gave a shit about that game. And there were zero stakes involved. And UConn just said, fuck this. Like, no, we're going to put belt to ass. And all of a sudden, it was a 40-5 end to that half. And we'll get deeper into the rest. But a couple of things that stood out to me, all five starters in double figures. Everybody hit a three, including the big guy. God, it's so amazing to see that. And that's a glimpse of what UConn's offense can be when all five are clicking. We've seen Caravan go through some slumps, Cam Spencer go through some slumps, Steph Castle have a little bit of his freshman moments. That was everyone's contributing. Everyone's hitting their, playing to their strengths. And it was insane. They just wear you down. Did you see how tired Carter and Odoro looked? They were gassed. They were absolutely, and to be fair, those are the only two real dangerous players on Providence, but in the same sense, that's similar to Marquette, where like Cam Jones and Oso Iguodaro, they just got worn down. They don't have enough help. You really have to go five studs to beat UConn. And the last stat I'll give you is from our good friends at Evan Maya. UConn has finished the regular season with their entire starting lineup in the top 23 most impactful players of the country. And Hassan Diarra, the Big East Sixth Man of the Year, is 54th. And some of the other teams' fifth best players, like Purdue's 115, Houston's 125, UNC's 227. I don't think we realize how dangerous this top seven really is.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest takeaway from this stretch is, I think 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, we kind of talked after that Villanova game, looking at Seton Hall, at Marquette, at Providence. Some real genuine nerves about how this may shake out. There's certainly in a perfect world or a not so perfect world, there's some losses out there for UConn, but it just kind of all worked out, right? You know, like Tyler Kolek has an injury. He has to miss the Marquette game. Oso Iguodaro is coming off of an illness. He's not himself. UConn takes care of business against that Marquette team, slays that ranked loss streak dragon that Patrick was so worried about, dating back to, you know, the Stone Age. But Providence, also, you know, a tough matchup. come out guns blazing, 15-2, 13-2 to start. Hurley gets that technical, and it really does change the whole feel of that game. I think the officiating changed. Whether that's fair or not is a different story, but it did change. I felt like it was a lot cleaner, especially compared to that last Providence game when the two teams played at Campbell. But that game, that Providence game, was over before the end of the first half, and UConn was down by 13 at one point. That's not normal. It was a 40-9 run to close things out. Ciara's buzzer beater three puts them up 18, and Providence definitely came back a little bit in the second half, but UConn stretched that lead out to almost 30 at one point, and it was really never close. And the scene that's going to keep playing back in my head thinking about this last stretch of the season in this game is that 2 minute stretch or so where Klingon had those two fast break dunks where he's just completely unguarded against Providence. The next possession, they expect him to crash to the basket again, right? And he just lays back, drains that three, and you can see the soul leave the Providence fans, the Providence players' bodies. It looked a lot like that Seton Hall ending that I talked about for probably way too long the last time we did this, how they just quit. And it's a little different, like you said, Patrick. Oduro, Carter, those are the only guys that are really able to do a whole lot for that team. And they had to play lights out for 40 minutes, and they just couldn't. They ran out of gas. But they just took care of business, and things worked out. And now, even with Kolek's injury after that Marquette win, the fear was, well, what if Marquette drops to the four seed? And now they have to go to UConn in the semifinals instead of maybe not seeing them until the championship game. So everything just kind of worked out. And sometimes those are the breaks you need when you're trying to do stuff that UConn is doing, right? When you're trying to win another national championship, trying to win a Big East conference tournament championship for the first time in, you know, 13, 14 years. So things are working out. It may not always be that way. There's going to be some adversity that this team faces at some point, whether it's a Big East tournament or beyond, but everything is going to plan so far.
Yeah. For me, it was just being so impressed with the way that they've been able to handle anything with so much composure, the way Marquette in that game really made multiple runs to come back and threaten to make that a closer game, the way Providence, like you said, got off to the fast start and they just overcame it, not having a ton to play for there. Two really tough places to win on the road, and they did it. I think, you know, again, we got to credit the coaching staff for what they do to keep the team motivated. Certainly the records and stuff at hand is motivating, but I think they also were motivated by some of the more intrinsic and personal stuff, you know, like Marquette winning the league, both league crowns last year, being picked to win it before the season this year. I'm sure that's something that Dan Hurley thought about a lot and was happy to really put to bed with a sweep. And Providence, you know, same thing. He said he'd eaten a lot of shit in that building. He was 0-5 before that in that building, and that was his first ever win there. So I think, you know, good for them for finding it. As for the on-court stuff, I mean, just everything is clicking at such a, you know, tremendous way. What else is there to say? You guys have covered a lot of it, but I would just add, I liked what we've been seeing from Samson Johnson lately. I think what he's able to do, you know, we've talked about it all year, but he's really doing it now, which is a good time to do it. I love really ruining the senior nights for Providence and Marquette. That's quite the week. You know, I think that's really awesome stuff to do for the seniors of Marquette and Providence, to witness greatness like that, to be able to witness the UConn juggernaut and say that in their final home collegiate game, they got to see, you know, really one of the greatest teams ever. And that's where I think we are with UConn right now. The kind of numbers on this stretch that they're on, especially if you go back to last year or go back to, let's just say, like March of last year or February of last year, the numbers are just incredible. For this season, what UConn has done, set the record for most ever wins in Big East play. They've set the UConn program record for wins in the regular season, and they tied the record for average margin in league play with the 1984-85 Patrick Ewing Georgetown Hoyas. That is some incredibly impressive stuff to do, to to say that you're sitting on top of UConn and Big East leaderboards after the regular season that they have had, folks. What do we feel about this regular season to remember in 2024?
Oh, I got a take, and you're not gonna like it. I'm sorry, everybody, and I'll put my name behind this, and I'll stand by this, but I'm worried that in hindsight, it's gonna look like a very, very soft league from top to bottom. And let me preface this by saying UConn is incredibly elite. Everything that you mentioned, Amon, is true. And this is a historic team. This is a historic stretch. However, beyond Creighton and Marquette, really, what else does this league offer? And I know you can point to a lot of the KenPom stuff. I think everything, like Madigan said, broke the right way for UConn to absolutely detonate this conference. Everything I'm saying should not discount what UConn has done at all. I just think that it broke the right way where they really only had five or six games that were tight and that would be looked back at now as like a great win.
I think that's fair. My only pushback would be that the top is really, really good. The Big East is the only conference in the AP poll that has three schools in the top 10. Nobody else has more than two. UConn beat Marquette by a total of 35 points. They split with Creighton. Things kind of went in the wrong direction in that game in Omaha, but all in all, they took care of business against the Blue Jays at Gamble. In terms of close games, I don't necessarily disagree, but there's some teams that kind of came to UConn, you know, giving them their best shot night in and night out. So the ones that stick out for me are the UConn game at Villanova. That's a 1-point win. Villanova played really well. They were kind of trending in the direction of being like a tournament team. It was more like not a bubble per se. Like, I don't know, what is that called? A hard bubble team? I don't know. But Butler, the game at Butler, UConn's down 12. Butler played great, or 12 or 7. UConn comes back and wins that game. It's not perfect. Xavier was really bad. St. John's briefly was really bad. DePaul, Georgetown, horrendous. But there's something to be said about just taking care of business. We've seen this with UConn women, right? We've seen this, the opposite of this, happened with UConn in the American, where there were so many garbage, dog shit teams in the American. UConn could not beat them, and it sucked. It torched their tournament resume. UConn's doing everything that they need to do. I understand the penalty for maybe saying the Big East is a weak conference, but the metrics don't really back that up. They're still the second best conference, according to KenPom, and that matters. I do think it's top heavy. I think UConn is carrying a lot of water there too, but I wouldn't say that it's a terrible conference. I think this conference could be dangerous come March NCAA tournament time.
The conference situation is just, it's really tough because like you said, those teams are really good. There's a middle that is extremely mediocre. And then there is the bottom, which we have discussed over and over. I think just to add to that, there's the Big East refereeing and style of games, right? So it's a different thing to adjust to. It's just tougher when the other team is much more familiar with you, playing you twice, home and away, all that stuff. But I will just say, you know, for UConn's credit here, like Madigan said, 3-1 record against those two good teams, beat a lot of the other teams by a lot, right? Like beat the shit out of Villanova at home, beat the shit out of Marquette at home. And so I think taking care of business in that magnitude of order is something that UConn acquits itself nicely. And then I think what UConn also has very much in its favor is the really strong non-conference schedule that they played and succeeded in, even without being a team at full strength. I think there's a lot of evidence, schedule aside, for why this UConn team is at full strength right now, all the stuff we've talked about in every previous podcast, basically. But UConn is very much at full strength right now, played through a tough schedule. And so I think, you know, with that part, Big East wins, a few Big East wins might have been a little bit easier to come by, but I think they still got enough of the ones that mattered, including these Creighton Marquette games, but even something like this Road Providence game or the ones that Madigan called out. I thought all of those were really good calls.
I was a naysayer before. I will go now and say, if you put UConn in the Big Ten in the ACC, they'd have the exact same record, I think. I don't know about the Big 12 just because that's, but I'm not sure about Houston and Kansas and possibly Iowa State. Maybe they might pick up like a couple other losses, but they would be right there. So in me saying that like the Big East isn't that great beyond the top three, I'm not trying to drag down this season. I worry that that might become a possible misidentifier with how UConn performs in the tournament, but we'll get to that. I mean, they got to get through the Big East first. And I personally still think Creighton is a huge, huge threat on that other side of the bracket.
Yeah, Amon said this, Patrick, you kind of went off it too. They still faced adversity. This UConn team still had a lot of adversity. It just wasn't necessarily in the form of super close games night in and night out. And it really reminds me of the conversations that I was having with people when I was covering the UConn women's teams of the like mid to late 2010s. They really had no adversity. They were just steamrolling people, but they were amazing. But this team had Klingon out for stretches, had Steph Castle go down with an injury, had multiple nights where Cam Spencer was banged up or ineffective or Caravan was ineffective. I don't think there's really a game where you can look back and say this team was UConn was firing on all cylinders for the entire 40 minutes consistently. I think it's been more and more common towards the end of the year where there's just been some games where they've just been lights out, like the Xavier win at home, the win against Marquette at home. That's just perfect basketball. It's really hard to stop that. But there's still some things that I think Hurley, Luke Murray, those guys can really harp on and say, we're really good. We know this. But these are some things that we can continue to do and improve to be even better. And I think there are things that are tangible, achievable, and things that the players can kind of visualize and improve on. I think that matters too.
And I think it's important that the way that they're finishing this season, I'm more bullish on this team now than I was a week ago after those two road wins that they picked up, because they showed something that you previously hadn't seen before this year, and the ability to win on the road, to be punched in the face and be down, you know, 12-5 or whatever against Providence. Creighton went on a similar nuclear run, if you remember, in the second half on the road. When UConn was on the road, Creighton went on a nuclear run, and UConn still came within 10 points and was like a couple of fluky plays and a very bad call on Klingon away from they cut it to 10 with 7 minutes left. That's anybody's game, and they were trending in the right direction. You have to think that like on a neutral court, possibly they get that down to a two possession game, and you're looking at that loss more favorably now. But even when you think from that game to how they responded against Providence, there is progression there. And even individual player to player, there is progression. When you think of how much better Samson Johnson has got, there is no midseason wall for Hassan Diarra this year. He's ran right through it. He was out of the rotation at this point last year, and now he's the Big East Sixth Man of the Year. And the starting five has to be one of the best starting fives in college basketball. So I feel a lot better about their postseason chances with the way they were tested in, like Madigan said, like the little micro ways in the last, I'd say, three or four games.
Yeah, they've proven that they can win any kind of game, and you know, that they have the roster to take on any kind of style that an opponent will throw at them.
Yeah, I think for me, for Hurley and the way this team is set up, they're really built for these non-conference, like neutral site NCAA tournament type games. They've lost one in the last 2 years. And I think it's fair to give Hurley and this coaching staff the benefit of the doubt that if there are some cracks in the armor, things that need to be shored up, they can do it and work through it in time to get ready for this type of tournament play that they've really excelled in since the beginning of last season.
And just stylistically, if Klingon can't get it going inside and he's getting in foul trouble, throw Carabane in at small ball or go vertical with Samson Johnson. If Cam Spencer can't connect from outside, have, you know, clear out and have Tristan Newton and Steph Castle get into the paint and get free throws. They can win so many different styles of play, and then, but also scenarios where, like, you want to play, you know, inside, outside, they can force feed Klingon and have him absolutely dominate if he has 4 inches on the next guy. How many 7'2" guys are there in the NCAA? I can't imagine more than 10, maybe even 5. And the odds of getting lined up with them beyond Ryan Kalkbrenner, I'd make that deal. So you have to feel comfortable with whatever type of game it is, except any kind someone that can get red hot from downtown and just absolutely scorch the Nets and go full 2016 Warriors on UConn, which I think the only team in the Big East tournament that can do that is Creighton.
Well, I just wanted to say, with regards to the accomplishments of the regular season, though, you know, again, we maybe a weak year for the league, but hey, they did what a really great team should do and dominated the heck out of it. Teams that they are comparing themselves to, you know, that they are comparing positively to now, like we mentioned, the 84-85 Georgetown team, the previous record of 17 wins in Big East play had been accomplished by three different teams, including 95-96 UConn, 2011-12 Syracuse, I have no recollection, and Marquette last year. UConn's 27 regular season wins have been done three other times. That was the previous record, that 95-96 year, 05-06, and 08-09. All really good years that UConn has put itself up against. Looking at the league awards, we also saw UConn really well represented here, I would say. A lot of best case scenario things occurring here. We've mentioned Hassan Diarra getting sixth man of the year. Castle made the all freshman team and will almost certainly be the freshman of the year after winning the weekly award a record 11 times. Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, Big East first team. I think to me, that's the, you know, remarkable, you know, outcome of this season that you could have only hoped for. And again, just like best case scenario for those guys there. Super excited for those two and what this might mean for them. And just for them to be honored for the great players that they are. I saw that Spencer finished just a smidge short of the 50-40-90. But just again, you know, like, wow, what a dog, what he did against Marquette, you know, that's good stuff. That's why you love him. But also, he's extremely good at basketball. He's such a tremendous plus to the offense, the most efficient offensive player in the country. And then, you know, Tristan Newton, who's just absolutely filling it up in a beast. Those are really just huge shout out to those guys.
And even the guy who potentially, and we'll get into this, got snubbed, is a 50-40-90 guy. Officially, he made it at the end. So, and that's your forgotten guy in the starting lineup. And part of that is because he's such a team player that he'll fade into the background if that's what's required of him. But I think everyone there was well-deserved of those rewards. No real surprises to me. I do want to go on a rant, though. Looking up the preseason All Big East team, guess how many they got correct?
One.
They got zero correct.
Huh. No way.
I'm confirming that quickly here.
They must
here.
Have had Kolick, right?
Kolick did not win. No, Kolick was not on. Well, so yeah, wait. So
they don't
get,
put the player of the year on the
because the preseason. Team. Okay, yeah, Kolick gets it as that, I guess. But I've always forget about him because of the injury and because I hate him. But They had Trey Alexander, Kalkbrenner, Bryce Hopkins, Soriano, and Justin Moore as the first team. And as we know, it was Newton Spencer, Shireman, Kolek, Devin Carter, and Kadari Richmond, all six deserving 100%. Can we get rid of the preseason teams? I feel like that's such a setup, and it's so much conjecture that to put someone at first team, second team, Klingon was named second, he bumped down to honorable mention. Just put like Big East awardee watch list. Something broader to say like this guy's really good and he could get some awards. Like he's flagged or something like that. To have someone, I feel like they're always wrong, and there's so much depends on season flow, Bryce Hopkins getting hurt, Kadari Richmond getting overlooked again. I'm not a fan of the preseason team list. Take it away.
It would be a real loss of bulleted board material for Dan Hurley if that happened, though.
Yeah,
no, I think that would be a major problem.
He'll find something. He always does.
True. But I have no qualms with this list. The first team, second team, I feel like this is about as good as it's going to get. I know Caravan is definitely the odd man out. I think he's an incredible player. He probably just was a little bit too up and down. These people that are, you know, these coaches that are voting on this probably aren't watching every game other than their own team as much as they probably say they are. Catch him on an off night, maybe it looks a little different. But I feel like Klingon being honorable mention makes sense. He missed five and a half games with his injury. Really hard to justify including him other than that. And Steph Castle, greatest freshman in Big East history. So should win freshman of the year, and you know, takes home unanimous selection to the all freshman team and broke Carmelo's record for freshman of the week with 11, which is pretty insane. And I don't think there was really any week where it was even in doubt that he would get it. So credit to him for putting in a great season.
I'd love to see more erasure of Syracuse from the record books, continuing just to wipe them out.
Especially the Big East record book. Come on. Yeah, that's good stuff. And look, I think there might be some more on the way. Dan Hurley has got to be the guy winning Coach of the Year in the Big East. I think he's getting lots of buzz for national. We've talked about this. He's getting more buzz than I thought, but obviously also the season is now going a lot better than I thought it would be 2 or 3 weeks ago. But it looks like Hurley's getting Coach of the Year. I don't think Tristan Newton or Cam Spencer is going to get Big East Player of the Year, and I'm okay with that. I don't really care who wins it. I don't care who wins it preseason or postseason, frankly. So that's my stance on that specific one award, Player of the Year, you know, which I take no pleasure in personally, because it's all about the team. And so, but I do think good for Dan Hurley, probably winning Big East Coach of the Year.
I think Shaheen Holloway could be the only other candidate. I think what the Seton Hall was picked to finish ninth, and they ended up at four. So pure numbers wise, that's a bigger jump from 3-1. But again, the way UConn detonated on everybody, you have to give it to the best team, I feel like, especially if the preseason expectations were underbaked. Love the job that Shaheen Holloway is doing, but no, he'll take that next year.
Yeah, I mean, UConn didn't even get a first place vote, and they ended up winning the conference by four games, and were in, if certain games flipped the right way, it would have been the largest margin of victory in conference history. So I think that's probably one thing that Hurley has going for him. But yeah, I feel like in terms of the player of the year race, to me, it's probably the four guys that were unanimous selections to the first team, right? So that's Newton, Shireman, Kolek, or Carter. I feel like you can make an argument for pretty much any of those guys, except for maybe Devin Carter, just because the way he kind of finished the year and Kolek was hurt. I feel like it's a two-horse race between Newton and Shireman. I don't really know if I'm going to get too riled up if it is either way, but I think Tristan Newton deserves the award. But if you're him, if you're Dan Hurley, I feel like they would both be totally fine if he doesn't get that award. It's another chip on his shoulder. Ends his year maybe with a national championship or a Final Four berth and an All-American honor, and gets on the wall. I think that would be a pretty cool ending either way. So Definitely something I'll keep an eye on for Wednesday whenever they announce those player awards, but not going to quibble too much with who takes it home.
Yeah, again, ultimately, UConn very well represented on this list. I do take issue with the Caravan snub just because he is such a good player, but again, it's like, who do you kick out? And just whatever. UConn's all over the list. If Caravan goes in, it probably kicks Klingon out and they just say like, oh, he didn't play enough games or something. This stuff is maybe more political than we'd like to believe even. So who knows? Looking ahead, we've got the Big East tournament starting this week. For the peasants, it's starting on Wednesday. And for the much cooler people on Thursday, UConn will tip off at noon against the winner of Xavier and Butler. I think we can all agree that we do not have significant fears for either of those opponents. The 4-5 game is Seton Hall versus St. John's. I mean, I'm also kind of not too scared about that matchup. UConn just stomped Seton Hall. They beat St. John's twice without Donovan Klingon, but just for fun, how are you guys feeling about the possibility of a Seton Hall or St. John's rematch? Which one would you like more?
Quick addendum to that. The second game they had Donovan Klingon versus St. John's, it was they were without Alex Caravan.
Oh, Caravan. Right. Sorry.
Amon regrets the error. But I'm not worried. But I know Madigan is obsessed with Butler and he's kind of scared with them. So I'll let him, you know, expand on that. I'm inclined to agree with him there. Butler does have some dudes and they have an offense that, like we were saying, the team that scares UConn most in postseason play is the one that just gets absolutely hot and you got nothing you can do about it. And that could be Butler with Thad Matta's offense. I don't think that will be Xavier. And then I think the bigger question would be if St. John's beats Seton Hall and really gets some momentum, you got the Johnny's crowd in the garden, some Rick Pitino, dark energy brewing. Can UConn overcome that? But like everyone has said, that the fact that they were to beat St. John's without Donovan Klingon that first time out, that game was on a platter for St. John's. And they still couldn't pull that out. And even, you know, having no Caravan on that other one and being close in a lot of that game, and then Cam Spencer took over, I just think that there's too many weapons. I don't see a world where any of those teams are a real threat. And until you get to Creighton.
I don't disagree. I still am scared of Butler. Jameel Telfort is just a matchup nightmare for UConn. I don't care what anyone says. He had 17 points in the last matchup. I think he had 19 or 21 in the first one at Hinkle. Just would rather not deal with that. If I had the choice, I would much rather play Xavier. But it's, I don't know. This team is playing so well right now that I don't think it's going to be a huge issue, maybe until the semifinals or even the championship game, just the way things are going. In terms of that Seton Hall, St. John's matchup, selfishly, I think I would rather play St. John's because if I believe this is the case, the NCAA is ruling that the NCAA tournament, the Big East tournament games at St. John's is going to have to play at MSG as home games. So those are just extra quad one wins. And UConn picking up another quad one win in March, right before Selection Sunday, could vault them up to the number one overall seed if things go right. And if it is a loss somehow, it doesn't necessarily hurt them. And Seton Hall still scares me. I don't like Kadari Richmond. He's right up there with Telfort for me. Don't know if I really want to go down that route if I don't have to, but I think I'd rather play St. John's just to try and make sure that's like the safest bet for that extra quad one win. And I think that might matter to the committee.
I like that. Yeah, I think it's definitely don't want to see Seton Hall, proven UConn beater, even despite the circumstances of that game. I guess St. John's is maybe surging right now, but I'm going to maintain my let's not get too excited about this Rick Pitino situation quite just yet still. Please, let's not pre-anoint. As you will see, nobody named him on our Coach of the Year discussion, and there's a reason why. Despite everyone rooting for him, seemingly, which is very disturbing. So for that reason, I think it would be cool to beat that team once again, really put the hurting on them with a full squad. And but ultimately, I think UConn should ride through these first two rounds. That's what my expectation is, whether it's Xavier, Butler, Seton Hall, St. John's, win them all by 15 or more, in my opinion. That's where I'm at. And then, you know, chips can fall in the championship game, but they got to get through these two, I think, this time.
Yeah, and if they do get there, and they'll most likely face one of Creighton or Marquette, I don't think it's a slam dunk that the Garden is 90% UConn fans. Those schools travel really well. I remember going to the UConn game last year, where they lost to Marquette, and I was pretty surprised by the amount of Marquette fans. And I know Creighton travels super well, and they have a great environment at their home place in Omaha, so I imagine that could carry over with their fans as well. So it's definitely an advantage for UConn to play at MSG. I think another part of it is that they play so many games there. They're comfortable playing there. Even if it's not necessarily a pro UConn crowd, they're kind of used to going through all the motions that are associated with it. I imagine it's the same hotel, try and keep everything as consistent as possible, and just little stuff like that that does make a difference, I think, this time of year where so many teams are so even. So yeah, it's no matter what, if UConn makes that championship game, I think it'll be close. I feel like even if it is some other team coming out of that other side of the bracket, they're kind of hot, right? It's like there's so many things that go into it, but UConn has as good of a chance as ever to win that first conference tournament title in the Big East since 2011. And that's a long time. They've been out. They were gone. They won one in the American. I think today, we're recording this on Monday, is the anniversary of Jalen Adams' shot that didn't win the conference tournament, but basically vaulted them into the NCAA tournament. So it's going to be exciting. It's a great time of year for UConn. There's a lot of clips, a lot of highlights, so many historic moments, and there's plenty of opportunities for this team to make a few more.
The Kemba step back was 2 days ago, I believe, March 9th, and I had wrote this down in my notes, and I'll ask you guys, do you see anyone that can go full Kemba and take over and just put their team on their back? I had Cam Jones possibly as going nuclear, but I don't see any other real Kemba candidates. Quincy Olivari is like really, really good, but I just don't think he has enough of like a supporting cast, and he's not that type of dude. No disrespect to him, I think he's a great player, and yeah, I just don't see any Kemba candidates out there. It's kind of just a thing of the past.
I'm cheating a little bit, but I think Kadari Richmond needs to be in that conversation. He kind of does that already.
I'm like, just
he's going to go as far as Seton Hall will go as far as he takes them, whether he's a Kemba candidate or not.
I really, really love the way Steph Castle is defending. And if as long as the majority of the minutes are against Richmond, he's going to get his. He's going to get his 15, 5, and 5 or whatever. But he's not going to go absolutely ballistic and put up 28 points and just will his team to a win. And I know we were talking about Devin Carter as possibly player of the year earlier. I was really disappointed with how he looked in these not just the UConn game, but we talked about this prior. They had two chances to pick up wins and solidify themselves on the right side of the bubble, and they didn't do it. I think he ran out of gas. He has no help on that team besides Aduro. So, yeah, he might go off for one game, but to be a dude, to pull a Kemba, I think the only guy could be Cam Jones. Maybe Trey Alexander or Shireman. Because again, I don't know, guys. I'm scared of Creighton. I shouldn't say scared. I'm very leery of Creighton.
You obviously should be after what we saw that they're capable of. And as Madigan mentioned, they'll have support at MSG. It's not going to be they're so far away. Something that I thought was funny, by the way, just quickly on that note, it made me think about, did you see that Providence fans and Marquette fans this week, multiple of them online, saying UConn fans won their Super Bowl by beating us in the regular season of a one game? Did you see that? Multiple multiple tweets suggesting this. I take offense to that. And then look, hey, I'll tell you who's a candidate to have a Kemba-like run. There's four guys on UConn who could do it at different times. So there's Tristan Newton. Tristan Newton could go on a, let's call it a Friday-Saturday run, you know, like Big East tournament, just like really do it in crunch time in those two games that matter. Arguably something that UConn did not have in the Marquette game last year was like a, who the heck is going to step up in this moment? We've talked about this all year. This year, they have three or four guys who you kind of would trust with a last shot. I'm even including Steph Castle in there. You would trust him to like drive on someone and create the last shot in the final seconds if needed. And then Spencer, Newton, Caravan, of course, you have all the confidence in the world in those guys. Newton has been proven to be such a playmaker when the well is dry for UConn. And Caravan, we've seen hit some daggers. So, and Spencer has done it in on previous teams. He's hit some in clutch situations, not necessarily end of game situations for UConn. So I think those guys all kind of have it in them. And I could see someone like a Caravan having, you know, like, let me just take over this weekend, kind of the way like Adama Sanogo did for like four games in the tourney last year, something like that. Not Kemba, but you know, close.
Yeah, it's an important asterisk to say that Kemba run will never be replicated. If you just say, yeah, there's a guy that could hit some crazy shots and be like this clutch dude in the last 2 minutes of a couple of games, I'd go Newton, I'd go Castle. I'm a little unsure if I want the ball in Spencer and Caravan's hands if it's a strictly 10 seconds you have to get into the paint situation, because we've seen them that they're more of an, you know, an outside threat and through ball movement. But when you, if it's like a 26 seconds left, they have to run one play, take your pick. Any of the four, it would almost be whoever gets open first and whoever makes the right read. That could even include like a lob to cling in to win the game type. I can see something crazy like that where everyone's so glued in on the shooters trying to run them off the 3-point line. Donovan Clingan slips a screen, lob dunk, UConn wins, beats place Creighton explodes. 70-68. And yeah, Madison Garden will never be the same.
Can I throw one out there? It's a very, very deep cut, and it's not a Kemba run per se through multiple games, but a stretch where they take over. I would like to throw out Hassan Diarra's name. And this is a crazy thing to say if I was telling this to my past self from a year ago, but he's played well in MSG this season. And this is kind of his game now. He comes in off the bench. It's just all gas, no breaks for 4, 5, 6 minutes at a time.
It's
and
so
just flips
sick.
The game on his head. It's amazing. It's so much fun. I could see him doing that, coming in, scoring 6 points, getting a steal, coming out
the Hassan
like
Diarra
a Deion Waiters heat check moment.
That's definitely not a Kemba-esque run, but something very, very cool that could happen. I thought you were going to say DeAndre Daniels. That's what I thought you.
Yeah, had. That's probably a better comparison, like, honestly. But I was trying to say, like, he could be Kemba for a few fleeting moments, you know?
Okay, well, that would be, no, I was to say a Phil Nolan breakaway dunk moment.
There we go.
That's better.
Joseph Singare. That's Samson Johnson.
That was the NCAA tournament, I should say.
Who would do the Phil Nolan draw a charge to win the game?
I think it's Newton. Newton's been drawing a lot of charges lately.
Yeah,
and they've kind of changed the officiating to go against that now. And he's still stepping in and grabbing those calls. Shades of RJ Cole. Shout out to RJ Cole.
Shout out to RJ Cole. Shout out to Tristan Newton, who does just so many things. He's a good rebounder. He's good at getting to the free throw line, which we love and respect as well. Final thing we're going to just talk about here, the price of tickets. We are finding that it is very hard to get into Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament. We're seeing a lot of tickets in the thousands. If you want to sit somewhere kind of normal, we're seeing a get in price in the 200-300s. getting higher and climbing higher for both of these weekends. What's the deal with ticket prices for the Big East and NCAA tournaments this year, folks? What are we going to do? How are we going to go to these games?
Okay. I don't have an answer because when UConn's really good, this is, I guess, the life that it is in New England. But do you think that that's going to have any impact on the environment, on the crowd in MSG? Because it's now, there are theories that like the rowdier fans from the upper bowl, you know, if they're being priced out and people that can afford those tickets, are they as passionate? Are they as loud as the, do we want to go down that road, or do we just want to kind of talk about that? Something else. Yeah, so I worry about that. I think they're getting priced out, and it's not going to be as rowdy as an environment. And then when you factor in that this UConn team is so sick, there's a world that UConn doesn't lose a game by more doesn't, like, they could win every game by double digits is what I'm trying to say. And the MSG crowd is almost kind of like subdued into a dud, because that's how good they've been. I think a lot of the situations we're talking about are worst case scenarios when it comes to like the Butlers and the Seton Hall, St. John's and the Creightons. And if things break the way they have continually braked all year, UConn wins probably all three of these games by what, 20, 15 and 10. When you look at quarters, semis and finals. As a result, I think that's going to mean a watered down Big East tournament environment.
Patrick is doing class warfare, but I do think that this is a topic that has been discussed at length just at UConn games in general across the season. And yeah, just to kind of underline the severity of the problem, UConn sent out an email saying, we had a certain allotment. There have been a lot of, basically like calls in from people ahead of you in line, essentially in the donor line, to get tickets, and you are not getting tickets, and people you know are not even getting tickets. And so, people who you know who can easily get tickets to anything are having trouble getting tickets to this. And then the secondary market has just gone insane. So that's really the state of things there. And will it be less loud? We cannot quantify. No one will take the right technology in Madison Square Garden to find out. Maybe we should, as journalists, take some
eye test
soundometers into the arena and figure this out. But I do think there is some credence to the idea that if you kind of price out certain types of fans, you do sacrifice your environment. I do agree with that.
I think that's fair. I also think some of it is just the way that the bracket broke down. So I haven't looked at the Wednesday prices, so I'm not going to pretend to know a lot about it. But the quarterfinal prices, there's an afternoon and a night session. And the afternoon session is the perfect storm. It's three really good Northeast teams that are within, UConn, Connecticut, a little farther away, but Seton Hall, St. John's as a 2:30 game, and then UConn and the winner of Butler Xavier at noon. Those are three fan bases in really close proximity. Everyone wants to go. It's the first time in forever that Seton Hall and St. John's are relevant and actually have a shot at winning maybe multiple games in Big East tournament. So I think that's some of it too. And on the other side, it's Creighton and Marquette, who we talked about. They always travel well. And Villanova is on that other side playing DePaul. Very possible that if they made it to the championship somehow or to the semifinals, they travel incredibly well. So it's part of the deal when you play in a really good conference and you have a amazing bucket list conference tournament in one of the best cities in the world. Stuff is going to get expensive sometimes. St. Patrick's Day weekend, hotels are at a premium, all this stuff. It's just like the perfect storm of things happening both in and out of the Big East's control that are leading to these prices being like this. And it definitely sucks, but I do think prices will go down leading up to tip. And depending on how these quarterfinals shake out, they could really, really plummet.
I mean, people are saying, yeah, this is UConn's best year ever. This is the most expensive Big East tickets ever. There's a narrative brewing that UConn is bad for college basketball and bad for the Big East. They might have to get sent back to the American and play their tournaments in Tulsa or whatever. But I'm going to be very interested to do what Madigan does and monitor these ticket prices. I think, or at least coming from my experience, I would always, when they would go on sale, what, like mid-January? And then there was usually a dip in February where you would kind of buy that dip and be good to go. That dip this year was like 150, 160, and it's gone up since then. So the projections and the trends are completely skewed from what they consistently have been. And what's been the one difference in the Big East seasons year over year, it's this year, it was UConn was this absolute unit wagon. So I do think that, like, UConn being so good has jacked up the prices, and that there's a lot of people in Connecticut that are just willing to pay a premium. So hopefully they bring the thunder, those that are lucky enough to go.
Yeah, and actually, to your point, there is a Marquette site, Paint Touches, that actually did an analysis of ratings, finding that UConn has been quite the boon for ratings for the league. Something to think about as they head into negotiations, which will be something that's important for the long-term blah 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 health of the league. But yeah, it's looking like 140 get in price for the Big East tournament right now. Is that,
that's good? Where's that at?
Approximately, I just saw it on StubHub. It's like 400 for Brooklyn and Boston for the NCAA tournament. So just a crazy, crazy set of circumstances there that it'll be like so hard to get to those games.
Yeah, I think I was talking to this group before we started recording. I've done a lot of extensive research. It's really like maybe 2 or 3 minutes of scrolling through tweets of people talking about why the regionals are so expensive. But seems like basically the way that the teams are playing this year, the top 8 to 12 to 16 teams in the country, just the way that they're located and the way that the regionals are located, a lot of teams with super strong fan bases, the UConns, the Dukes, the North Carolinas of the world, all want to be in Boston because it doesn't really make as much sense to be anywhere else. And so I think people are trying to jump the gun on that, and that's kind of what's driving up these prices a little bit. But yeah, it's pricey. It's pretty expensive to just go to the NCAA tournament as is. I know I looked at tickets in Vegas when UConn was out there last year. I don't remember them being super cheap either, but it's possible I looked at a really bad time. So I think some of it is just the timing. It could go down, it could go way up. It really depends on how the bracket shakes out, but people might be trying to get ahead of it a little bit this year.
I think what the bigger shock has been is how consistently high they've been. They've been this level or at an unreasonable level for the last month. So people who usually are smart and plan ahead will log on in February and say, like, no, I can't do that. That's not in my range. As opposed to like the slow build, and it gets bigger and bigger and scenarios start to crystallize. And then it's like, okay, then you're priced out. A certain group has been priced out like since the start of February, which is insane. And it stinks because, you know, you want everyone to experience this and whatnot. But yeah, it's just the way the world works, and it sucks. But hopefully, maybe just keep monitoring, I guess, is all we can say. And hopefully someone gets lucky if you really want to go and it's not in your range. And yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, in the secondary market, a lot of that initial pricing is speculative. So it is probably best to wait until the brackets come out. And like you said, even potentially up until the day of a game to get tickets. That has been the case where I have had some good luck in the past, depending on the situation, because some people just set really high prices and then other people just follow. And that's how the secondary market goes. Right now, still not a ton of people buying them, especially for the NCAA tournament. I think there's really only UConn fans looking at NCAA tournament tickets with that much confidence right now in terms of region and bracket. So, but hey, Big East tournament will be a good time. We're looking forward to it.
This is like, it's like Taylor Swift tickets. I'm just realizing that this is the same feeling I got when I was hunting down Taylor Swift tickets for my fiance. I was going through Facebook Marketplace, through Twitter. Pretty soon we're going to be seeing these like sites pop up of like, we've got these tickets, DM for details. And you have to go through all these verifications. And I guess the last thing I'll say again then is be careful out there. There's a lot of bad actors. Don't get scammed. And if you see something, say something.
On that lovely note, that is going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening.